Parties.
Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Heidi Adams. Thank you for joining me. This week, we'll dive into the future of film and entertainment across Africa. As internet streaming giants make a major play for the continent, we'll examine why they're going over the top to serve up stories by Africans, for Africans, and about Africans. Also, we investigate the past, present, and future of African cinema. Filmmaker Bukari Sawadogo joins me to discuss African identity and representation in film. And Nollywood gets ready for its close-up. We'll tell you about the game-changing moment for the industry with new platforms, more deals, and global audiences. All that ahead, Straight Talk Africa starts now. It's called over-the-top entertainment, which means forget cables and satellite dishes. The race is on to bring you shows and movies directly via the internet. And right now, two big online streaming giants, Showmax and Netflix, are battling for dominance in Africa. Now, the South African-based video-on-demand service Showmax is available in over 70 countries worldwide. 45 of them are in Africa, with over 20 million subscribers and content in more than 17 languages. Showmax says it knows the African context better than anyone. It's developing movies and shows set in Africa's biggest markets, South Africa, Nigeria, and Kenya. Showmax says shows like this crime procedural set in Nairobi gives it a homegrown edge.
Tell us what happened.
She contacted me. Akisema, she had a story to tell that would shock the city.
Is it so unusual for a man to have another woman?
No, it's not. Nobody, no matter how rich or how powerful you are, no one is above the law.
These events have caused a deep excitement.
Was his death an accident too?
We are women in the land of men.
For us, it really is about getting the local entertainment, which we know our African audiences enjoy, programming in their languages, stories reflecting their realities, their hopes and their dreams, making that as widely available as possible. And for that reason, we now look at mobile subscriptions as well as the regular lean back.
Now, Showmax's main rival in Africa is Netflix, the American global streaming giant. Looking to add to its more than 200 million global subscribers, Netflix is expanding its footprint on the continent and boosting its library of African content. Now, like Showmax, Netflix won't say how much it's investing in Africa, but says it has a slew of content licensing deals with African producers in markets including Senegal, Ghana, Zimbabwe, Angola, and Mozambique. With more than a billion potential viewers across Africa, both Showmax and Netflix are seeing big opportunities. They're also facing big challenges, including slow and expensive internet, piracy, and lack of proper payment infrastructure in many countries. However, Africa's film producers see the battle of the streamers as a world of new possibilities. In Nigeria, some film producers see the arrival of Netflix as a chance to revolutionize Nollywood. VOA's Arzuma Kumpayore explains.
They want your dad to turn it down.
Whether she produced or acted in it, you have probably seen her name attached to well over 30 movies streaming on Netflix. Nollywood superstar Omoni Oboli, like many other African filmmakers, have been involved with production from the continent that have acquired worldwide exposure thanks to the streaming service giant. She says getting your movie on Netflix is a game changer.
People were watching our movies all over the world, but most of it was piracy. Now our movies are available to the whole world, and they're available legally and financially beneficial to us. So I would say Netflix has come to open a different world to our movies. Not everyone is going to go to First Pack, or not everyone is going to go to Qatar. Not everyone is going to go to all those film festivals. But now, from the comfort of their homes, they now have access to you and your projects. You know, so now they can reach out to you. Now they can say, you know what? I've seen this project. I like it. I want to do a remake of this project in my own country. I want to do a co-production deal with you on a sequel for this project, right? So before Netflix, we didn't have that.
Netflix coming into Africa, you know, it's like a dream come true for us, because now we know that we have a platform that can take our films, no matter if we're shooting, it doesn't matter if we're shooting in Africa or we shoot in the U.S. or we shoot in Canada or Australia, we have a platform that can take our films to the global market.
Pascal Atuma is also a Nollywood veteran with numerous films under his belt. His latest one, Clash, was released last month on Netflix and talks about the journey of a young Nigerian-Canadian looking for his biological father, only to find himself entangled between love and the reality of a multicultural society. Atuma says the movie is an exploration of the shock between cultures, something Omoni Oboli, who acts in it, says she has experienced firsthand.
I live in Canada and Nigeria, right? I see the clash of both cultures. My kids had to move from Nigeria to Canada, right? So I see that there is a whole world of difference. Their friends come into the house. I see the difference. As an African mom, I have to always tell myself, okay, it's different here. The kids are different. They behave differently. So you're from one extreme and the other people are from the other extreme. How do you balance this?
What are you doing here?
They're just kids. They're just hanging out.
Hanging out. They're just hanging out in the bedroom with
relax.
Nega.
Atuma says shooting Clash in Nigeria and Canada was a strategic move.
What the?
Calm down now.
So we wanted to show the Canadian government in particular, that a movie led by a Nigerian, directed by a Nigerian, Canadian, produced by Nigerian, by the head producer, and produced with some Canadians, that we can combine to make progressive projects that can go global.
For many years, the Nigerian film industry has been among the world's top three film industries in terms of volume, next to the United States and India. And now, Netflix is giving it a new boost by commissioning more original content and becoming the dream deal for many producers. But what Oboli wants above all is to see more female directors and producers in Nollywood being recognized for their work with no criticism.
You know, people would criticize what they can't understand. You're this little woman who's supposed to be in a little corner doing little things, and you're trying to do big things. So they're going to criticize it. It's okay. I'm not going to let that stop me. I'm not looking to them for validation. I know who I am. I know what I bring to the table. I have a seat at the table, and no one is going to take it away from me.
With Netflix now looking to diversify its programming by adding more original content, Pascal Atuma says African producers are ready. They have the languages, the cultures, and most importantly, an international audience that has yet to discover all the African stories that will soon populate the small screens.
Is this how you're going to be? Coming here to mess everything up?
The man can't be his dog! Bring everything short!
Azuma Kumpayore there for us. Azuma, thank you. Now, we also asked you this question on social media. What would you like to see featured in African cinema? Amenga Taramum from Nigeria would like to see movies about corruption and vote buying and election rigging. Wusu from Ghana wants to see movies along more or less the same lines, corruption, he says, within government procurement processes. And Wusu, I must tell you, in South Africa, we call that tenderpreneurship. And Emmanuel Musabyimana says, corruption and political disorientation. That's what he wants to see. And Majok Adud Agani from South Sudan says he'd like to see movies about the Tigray conflict and South Sudan's crippling peace process. Another one from Vincent Thompson Atuma in Nigeria. He'd like to see movies about African history and cultural features. And I do appreciate you sharing your comments on social media with us. Please keep engaging with us this way. And you'll see some of those themes that you mentioned in your comments. You'll see some of that coming up in this discussion that I had with Bukhari Sawadogo. He's a filmmaker and professor of cinema studies at City College of New York. We talked about African representation and identity in film and the future of African cinema. Bukhari, thank you so much for your time. Great to be speaking to you. Now, you teach African cinema. What are the three most important things that you teach your students about the world of African cinema?
The three most important things that I teach my students, the first one is a film as a means or a tool for political and cultural liberation. And that by showcasing how African cinema has contributed to the liberation struggle of countries in Africa fighting for political independence in the 1960s through the 80s. In that sense, film is a critical element of political liberation. And also, in the subsequent years of nation-building efforts, because once African countries gain their independence, now you are in the nation-building efforts, which means how do you pull together linguistic and ethnic communities in a nation framework? And film has been an instrument in achieving that. So which is kind of feeds into the larger conversation of what's the function of film or cinema, which some people talk about escapism, militancy, or entertainment, but the inception of African cinema should be placed in that context of militancy and fighting to gain independence and also to give dignity to African people. That's the first thing. The second for me is really the importance of representation. To see oneself on the screen, to see one story being told from one's perspective is very critical in constructing one's identity, but also to be able to confidently engage with the world. And film has allowed that for Africa, obviously after the end of colonialism, where they've gone through erasure of history, erasure of identity. And the third most important thing that I teach my student is the sweeping structural changes that is really going through the landscape of African cinema today. The first one is simply what I call the intervention of media giant in African cinema. We have a case most known for the case of Netflix, which started as a platform that acquired simply African titles, but now it has moved into producing content in Africa. And I'm thinking of the first two Netflix African original series, Queen Sono and Blood and Water, which came out early last year. And so you have that challenge. And the second sweeping changes is we have more and more accessibility of content through the rise of TV series, because this has not been the case, because up to the end of the 1990s, TV series in Africa was consumed mostly in foreign TV series. But starting from the early 2000s, we have the rise in the production and circulation of TV series. And the third, in terms of sweeping changes, is how video and digital technologies has really revolutionized production and distribution on the continent. Because in the prior years, I'm thinking about before 2000, you have to go to film school, mostly in Europe, in the West, to make films, but not now anymore, because you have accessible equipment. And in terms of distribution, used to be the festival circuit. That is really the main, you know, distribution network. But now we have more venues to show.
Give us an idea of who you're teaching. Who's interested in learning about African cinema these days?
In my African cinema classes, those are mostly minorities. When I say minorities, and I have a lot of African students in my class, and those are sometimes first generation immigrant or second generation immigrants. And I also have many African American students in my class, because I remember last year melts my heart when I received an email from a student who said, you know, thank you so much, professor, for exposing me to film from the continent. And my mom also sends you her best regard, because all throughout, you know, the semester, I didn't know that, okay, her mom was also, you know, following the class, watching the movie, and, you know, everything. So it's that's one of, bonus of teaching online. You don't know who is on the other end. Yes.
Now, of course, a lot has changed in the landscape of African film. A lot has changed on the continent. A lot has changed in the world. What are the trends that you're seeing about the kind of stories and subjects that African filmmakers are tackling right now?
Right now, what we're tackling are mostly what I call transnational issues. The first one that comes to my mind is migration. And I'm thinking of a film, Atlantics, by Mati Diop, 2019. And I'm thinking of extremist violence, which is also fits in the category of transnational issues. And we have Timbuktu by Abderrahman Sissako from Mauritania. But in addition to transnational, maybe I should say to contextualize the transnational issues, we have to think about it against the backdrop of how far African filmmakers have come. Because most African filmmakers from the 60s to the early 90s, most used to live on the continent, produce on the continent, and it's only maybe distribution that they go abroad. But, you know, starting with 2000, we see the international space has become not only space of work or residence, and sometimes we see filmmakers, you know, living in one place and working in another. So it really, you know, fits with that, you know, larger framework. Another theme that I see really, you know, coming up is, it's not coming up, it's already present. I would say a continued thematic treatment of gender, women issue, and sexuality. And on that note, I'm thinking of Rafiki by Wanuru Kayu from Kenya. That's, you know, my students love watching. Also, I'm thinking about recently, last year, I screened Sophia. It's a Moroccan film about abortion, how difficult it is or illegal to get abortion in Morocco. And that's why I'm saying it's a kind of continuation of what has been already on the ground, but really now it's getting more visibility because for certain films on some topics that may be seen controversial, which would never have seen the light of the day, but now they have. But in addition to that, transnational issues plus gender, women, and sexuality, there is a more and more like a kind of eclectic selection of topics that is coming up through what I call genre cinema, which is, you know, comedies, thriller, action. And for that, I'm thinking mostly of Nollywood. How is it very difficult to put one theme on Nollywood, you know, movies. So I think it's, to sum up, I would say there is innovation, but continuity in terms of thematic treatment.
And of course, African filmmakers are everywhere in the world. But do you see a difference between the kind of stories told by filmmakers on the continent and those in the diaspora?
I would say the differences are simply that each entity, Africa and the diaspora, each tell a story that are consistent or set in their own cultural and historical references, or simply that are rooted in their own experience. So in that sense, it's a little bit different. But we've seen with so many examples that we have crossed over in terms of the treatment of history and also the shared blackness in global cities. And I will give a specific example. We have last year Coming to America 2, which is, you know, could definitely make that, you know, crossover. And also we have Black Panther, which really links the two. And I would say last year also, that was in the third of last year, 2020, you have the release of Enslaved, which is the TV series by Samuel L. Jackson, which talks about over 400 years of slavery, the history. You have the release of the HBO series, which are directed by the Asian Raoul Peck, Exterminate All the Brutes. So we see, although African cinema or cinema of the diaspora are kind of in a silo, expressing and bringing to the fore the experience and realities of each entity, we see a lot of crossover and in terms of thematic treatment. But also we have the work of some producers who are producing African content. Here I'm thinking of Danny Glover, who, you know, could produce a lot of African content, and also Forrest Whitaker, who's are active in producing African content. So we may sometimes be in different silos or feel we are in different silos, but a lot of ways where we are cross-pollinating, you know, to each other in terms of imagination and cultural productions.
Earlier in the show, we were talking about the race between streaming giants for dominance in Africa. In your view, is it more important to get African films seen by a global audience or to get African audiences seeing content produced by African filmmakers?
I will say both, but in reverse order. I will say it's critically important for Africans to see African content. Why? Because traditionally, African cinema has not always been accessible, available to African audiences, because films were made and they went through overseas festival circuits. And sometimes it's only through press that, you know, the everyday people hear about it but never get to see it. And that was later coupled with the direct consequences of structural adjustment programs by the IMF, which kind of destroyed the cultural industry in most African countries with the closure of movie theaters. So you put the two together. For decades, many Africans, I will say, in the large majority of Africans, didn't have access or didn't see their own movies. So for me, it's important for Africans to be able to see their own movies because, as I said earlier, in terms of even to the power to see oneself on screen, there's no words to put onto that power and to engage with it. And to be able to keep your head high, walk confidently, and think highly of yourself, that is a lot. You know, that brings feeds a lot into your confidence to engage with the world. So for me, definitely first African be able to see their own films. But here is the caveat with, you know, okay, streaming, because you have what I call prerequisite, infrastructural prerequisite. In order for streaming to happen, you need a reliable power grid, which is very challenging in most African countries. And you need also a stable internet connection, and that also is not given. And third, you need an affordable internet services. You may have a power grid, you may have the internet connection, but is it, you know, affordable on people's budgets? So on that sense, say yes, there is that possibility, but we may run the risk of cinema just being an experience of urban dwellers.
And we'll bring you more from my conversation with Bukhari Sawadogo after the break. Also, a conversation with the woman behind the unconventional love story between Nollywood and Bollywood. Azuma Compayore speaks to the movie producer and director of Namaste Wahala. We'll be right back.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
With Straight Talk Africa, welcome back. We're talking about the future of African cinema. Here now is more from my conversation with filmmaker and African cinema expert Bukhari Sawadogo.
I think I did an interview, you know, on a different channel about Black is King by Beyonce. I know when it came out, you know, last year, when viral discussion on different platforms, the representation of Africa, you know, Africa through kings and queens, as if it's something that is set in stone, you know, for centuries. But you have a new, I don't want to say new Africa, but, you know, you have a contemporary Africa that viewers want to see or need to see. So I would say, you know, today, if I look at some of the recently successful, you know, films, be it critical, you know, that had critical acclaim or commercial, you know, success, I think those are films that are simply resonate with people on a deeper level and usually simply, you know, everyday, you know, people, everyday stories. And if you take Atlantics, it's not about kings and queens or royalties. It's just about, you know, trying to, the passage of, adolescence to adulthood, or trying to move to a different space to make a better life for yourself. And those kind of universal stories that resonate with people. So I would say, if for Africans, I would say just have a story that is compelling and that's really, you know, can speak to people at the gut level. You don't need, you know, to look into the sphere of royalties really to be successful. Yeah, if we talk about the diaspora, I'm talking about African American, you know, cinema. So, I understand the need to really address the trauma, you know, in terms of, post-slavery. But across the Atlantic, you know, in Africa, those themes are, you know, starting to get a little bit, you know, I don't say worn out. When I say worn out, I might be misunderstood that I kind of devalue, you know, the work and the need, you know, to process what has happened. I'm just saying that, okay, kind of repetitive themes that at one point people start to tune out. The same thing for Africa, the themes that are people starting now to tune out, which is anything, I don't say anything, but almost anything that is related to colonialism. People's like, okay, we talked about it. We know the legacy still stays with us, but we just want to move on, you know, to something else. I would say for young people, it's kind of more like, you know, generational, because for my generation, and even younger, who, you know, born, you know, decades after, you know, the end of colonialism, you know, after countries gained the independence, there's certain things that we want to move away from. And it doesn't mean that, okay, colonialism is a legacy, is not, you know, present. It doesn't mean that it's not something that we kind of just, you know, don't want to talk about it. It's simply that at one point, we want to talk about our everyday life. We want to, you know, because we are in a so globalized world that we see instantly what is happening, you know, around the world, be it in terms of, you know, fashion, being in terms of music, and being in terms of, you know, creative. And we want to be part of that conversation, but also not be feeling that we are being held to the past and not being able to move forward.
And for filmmakers themselves, especially those on the continent, in terms of producing and distributing their work, do you think the environment has become harder or has it become easier for them to do their work and to actually make a living doing film?
I think that, okay, it's kind of both. It became easier and harder, or I would say easier and relatively still hard. And I would take the example of production. In terms of production, the task has been relatively easier with video and digital technology. It's relatively easier. And also coupled with the fact that now you have more film school open up on the continent. So in terms of talent, in terms of technical staff, you don't need always to go to the West. It's already present, and they know the terrain, they know the environment, they can work effectively on a project and deliver it. So on that sense, I would say relatively easy, you know, in terms of the production. In terms of distribution, it's also relatively easier because, you know, the digital technologies kind of democratize the access to platforms and also to multiple screens. So that is, you know, relatively easier. But what is still a relatively harder is funding. Because so far, we are still in search of the best economic model that will allow the emergence and thriving of sustainable film industries. And that is still, you know, difficult because in some quarters, in some parts of Africa, the economic model or the funding model is still heavily reliable on soft money. So which means that when that dries up, it's very difficult to get an alternative, you know, source of funding. But that, I should say, that we have creative ways that are coming up, that talent are showing, which is crowdfunding, and also trying to get the private sector to be interested in funding cinema. So that's, you know, the challenge. And another one which is related to distribution is, it's true we have Netflix. It's true that we have local TV stations. We have a transnational TV station. I'm thinking of China Star Times or India, you know, ZTV. It's true that we have, you know, more interest in African cinema. But so far, that hasn't generated enough income or stream of income for the filmmakers to be able to go from one production to the next without really delaying or, you know, spending a lot of years to find more sources of funding.
You know, this conversation makes me think about what it was several years ago that I was on assignment in Harare in Zimbabwe, and I was in my hotel room, turned on the television, and I found a lot of Chinese content. A lot of TV shows were in Mandarin, of course. And, you know, I'm sure a lot has changed since then, but now you can turn on the television in some African countries and get a wide range of international content. And I mean, beyond the British, French, and American variety, you'll see, like I said, Chinese content, Turkish content, Indian films and TV shows. And I often wonder whether this is a two-way street. Are viewers in those countries consuming or exposed to as much of Africa's content?
It's not the relationship here is in balance, in the sense that okay, we see more interest, corporate interest in African media landscape, in African cinema landscape, than the other way around. Which is if you have opportunity to see African content overseas, you know, be it you know in India or China, it will be simply on streaming platform or through an enclave of an immigrant enclave or diaspora there. But to see channels broadcasting it, that's, you know, I have yet to see it or heard, you know, hear about it. So it's an imbalance.
We were talking earlier about an enabling environment. If you ever had the opportunity, what would you say, what would your advice be to governments and policymakers across Africa about why they should invest in the film business in their country? What is in it for them and for the people of their country?
Yes, I think, you know, okay, maybe I will ruffle some feathers here, but I will say, yes, because the need is... If you are to think in terms of, you know, money, you know, film can bring money, but also it's not always about money. It's about, you know, self-esteem. Because once, you know, a person feel as a whole, that person will be a very productive unit if we were to think in terms of a capitalistic, you know, terms. And just, you know, one example, is I was discussing the same question with someone, you know, I don't know, many months ago, and the person, you know, rightly made an observation to me, which I say it makes sense, is that, you know, how many prime ministers in Africa or chief of government can you really think of who are not economists? Very difficult. And that's kind of, you know, okay, dictates everything, how the whole government thinks about, you know, different sectors. So if we think, you know, just imagine the alternative scenario where, you know, prime minister or chief of, you know, executive is any, you know, is not an economist. Probably the thinking is not always about, you know, how much that this is going to bring. And I think that's, you know, we have to factor that into the equation. And also, I think it's my knowledge, you know, I believe that in the African Union there is a. But it's already an ongoing initiative about pushing for, you know, an African film industry, you know, a vibrant one. But I don't know all the details. But I know at least in West Africa, I can give specific example of governments that have already set up film fund. We have a case of Senegal, and the fund is named Fopica. And we have Cote d'Ivoire, it's known Fonseca. You have Ghana, it's named Film Fund. So we have, I think this we have come, you know, a long way, but we're going back to the drawing, you know, table. Why am I saying that? Because initially, at the inception of African cinema, we have many countries that are really government that are pushing funding and distributing African cinema. And then we went through a phase where government kind of withdraw, you know, because of liberalization. Now some government are coming back, you know, setting up legal and business framework for sustainable film industries, you know, to emerge, because they realize that this actually, you know, will be helpful on many levels. Because now I know the buzzword is youth employment on the continent, and for every avenue that can be opened up to employ youth, I think governments is going to look into that.
Now, Bukhari, much has been written, produced and discussed about the history of African cinema. What excites you the most about the future of African cinema?
Yeah, I'm really, you know, very, you know, hopeful, and I'm very optimistic, you know, looking at some, you know, certain things that is already, you know, happening. I would see first, take the case of Nollywood. I know Nollywood has its detractors, you know, but what is clear is it shows how with so limited resources, one can be creative, resourceful, and showcase talent. And this is exactly what Africa needs, because in terms of film is a very expensive endeavor, and money, we know that on the continent, not many governments put money on the table for filmmakers, and not the private sector also fund cinema. So to be able really to create a model that is economically sustainable, that also have a global appeal, for me, I'm very hopeful, and optimistic that, other models will spring up, on how to be resilient and innovative with so many, with so limited resources. That's one. Two is, I would say, TV series. Why am I coming to that? Because more and more, some people are talking about, should we talk about cinema or should we simply talk about media? Because, we see kind of, the lines are blurring and the boundaries are blurring. And this is where I see a lot of creativity, where you have local stories that are really being produced. And you have, in terms of reception, we have local audiences that are simply, infatuated with those stories. And for me, this is important because it gets production going, but also it gets local people to identify with those stories. And third for me is, the most critical point is how we see more and more female African, filmmakers. And that is really significant because I had teach a class, African cinema, gender and culture, where I address those issues. You see, we have women who make up 52% of African population, but yet in terms of their representation, I would say behind the camera as, directors or in front of cameras, actresses, we are far off the target. But we see, this young generation, and I can give names of Mati Diop, I can give names of Waniru Kahiu, I see many names in Nigeria. And that gives me hope that in terms of a balanced storytelling, we will see more balance. Because if we talk about imbalance, structural imbalance between the West and Africa in terms of distribution, production, we will have also to see the imbalance within ourselves on the continent where women, don't have, much voice in filmmaking. But now we see those voices coming up and the matters. And to see that, I just give one example. I don't know why Mati Diop always comes to my mind, but to see, the first black woman to gain the Grand Prix at Cannes Film Festival, to me it's like, yes, this is over, long overdue.
All right, Bukhari Sawadogo, filmmaker and African cinema expert, thank you so much for joining me from New York. I appreciate it.
And thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about African cinema. Always my pleasure.
Now, we also asked you on social media, do you think it is important for African governments to invest in the business of African cinema? Katakia Evans Osei Wusu from Ghana says, yes, it's a great medium to tell our story without prejudice. Vincent Thompson Atuma from Nigeria says, yes, by creating an enabling environment for African cinema to really thrive. Simanda Francis says, African leaders put politics before anything else. To them, it's all about staying in power at all costs. Very few think about developing the local man. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for always sharing your social media comments with us. You keep them coming, and I'll read them on air. Now, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, Azuma Compayore goes one-on-one with Nollywood movie producer Hamisha Daryani Ahuja, and what happened when Nollywood met Bollywood. Stay with us.
from around the world. Let's go.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa. Namaste Wahala, which in Hindi and Nigerian pidgin means hello trouble, is a cross-cultural romantic comedy about an Indian man who falls in love with a Nigerian woman. Add to the mix some very involved parents and you have drama.
This is Raj, my cousin, and he's an investment banker.
And he's single.
And this is Didi. She's a sweetheart.
She's a lawyer.
And she's very,
very single.
If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. I'm going to marry you.
Excuse me?
But beyond the storyline and behind the cameras, Namaste Wahala is also a marriage between Nollywood and Bollywood. Arzuma Kompayore recently spoke to the movie's director, Hamisha Dariani Ahuja, and asked her what made her do it.
So I live in Nigeria. Lagos is home. And I've run a business here for 7 years. I was running a restaurant called Bistro 7. And then it actually got acquired. So I had some partners buy into the restaurant. And I'm now a shareholder and a silent partner, so that left me a lot of time to actually follow my dreams, which is enter the filmmaking business. And that's how I jumped into the Nollywood industry.
So what made you want to, you know, make this particular film, Namaste Wahala? And tell us a little bit, what is it about?
So why I wanted to make this film, I find that with Nigeria, again, I've grown up here, a lot of my Nigerian friends, majority of people here say they've grown up on a Bollywood diet. So people here love Bollywood. They know Shami Kapoor, they know Amitabh Bachchan, Hema Malini. So that was already really exciting. And Zee Cinema plays a huge part in Nigeria as well. A lot of the Zee Cinema shows from India come in and get dubbed in English. And you can see it in coffee shops and you can see it in hairdressers. And I just thought, why not do something that's a little bit more targeted here, you know? So an English movie, Nollywood, but with some pidgin English, with some Indian actors, and fuse the two and see what happens. And so, yeah, that's what Namaste Wahala is.
And this movie has something particular, too. It's not just a random, you know, crossover movie. You really packed it with a lot of stars. Would you tell us a little bit about all the people that are in the movie?
So we have a lot of stars, as you said. We have, I like to call him Oga RMB. In over here, that means Mr. RMB or boss, because he is the Amitabh Bachchan of Nigeria. He's the most Nollywood actor here, and he plays the father of the protagonist. Then we have Inidima. And she is the main character. She is the Nigerian woman that falls in love with an Indian man, who is Ruslan Mumtaz. He's from Bombay, and his mother is Sujata Singh. So we have a lot of little cameo and guest appearances, like Brother Shaggy, very popular here, popular comedian. We have a couple of people from the Big Brother house. So last year, I actually did a workshop. I also do motivational speaking for the Big Brother house. And there were 11 housemates left, out of which there was Fraud and Cindy. So they made a guest appearance in the movie as well.
Tell us, how one gets to have such a movie, anticipated movie on Netflix?
So to be honest, the movie was actually meant to go to cinema. We were actually going to release in April and then go hopefully to Netflix. I always wanted it to end up on Netflix. You know, when I started, it was a maiden project. It was something exciting. It was a passion project. I had no idea how far it was going. However, while I was on set and while I was seeing this magic unfold, I knew it was meant for something global. I knew that it was meant to be an impact piece. And what's so, you know, I always believe in the universe that conspires for us. When I finished shooting the movie in February, Netflix landed in Nigeria, literally a week later, saying that they're looking for African content. They had this big bonanza party saying we have now arrived. So it was divine timing. It was perfect, you know, perfect the way it worked. Now, what happened was COVID hit in between. while I was doing the editing and post-production process. And so on that note, we then did delay again, saying, you know what, let's try for October. No one knew how long this pandemic was going to last. And as in how things were escalating, it just seemed like the right thing to do, the safer option. And and Netflix loved the movie. And I'm just so excited and so grateful that they've made it an original and it's got a global release.
Everybody talks about Hollywood, talks about Bollywood and Nollywood. Those are the three big industries out there. And now we have a crossover between Nollywood and Bollywood. What does that mean for you?
What that means for me, so that's a lot of fun, a lot of laughter, a lot of color, a lot of glam. So, you know, the two industries have their own fortes. We love big parties. So maybe there's a big party in the movie. The fashion, the food, the overlaps and the differences and how they get accentuated in there. So I don't want to spoil too much for you, but that's... There's this, for example, from Bollywood, what we grew up on was Dancing Around Trees. So we have that for sure. Then we have the typical Nollywood drama and the suspense that's all in there.
So, in a way, do you think that this is, you know, the first of something that's going to keep going? Because, you know, it just makes it like more natural than anything.
100%. I'm already working on more. It's not only so fun, it's so much in demand. I mean, just from the trailer drop alone, the hype is huge. So I'm super excited to explore more and do more of these cross-cultural relationships. And it's also so real. Like, I mean, one of the things that I get a lot on social media, a lot of DMs is, thank you for making this, I feel seen. Because it happens so much, and then you don't get to see it so much on screen.
Hey, Didi, listen, you think it's easy to find ones to buy what you're selling? You better brace up. You're lucky.
So I'm a diehard romantic. I really believe love conquers all. And of course I've seen it. And then not just, I mean, there's nationality, there's religion, there's so many, there's age factors. There's so many differences in people when they come together. And it's so real. You know, typical families will say, no, but I want someone from my country or I want someone from my religion. Of course, I've had families intermarry. I've had, like my cousin married someone of another religion. And I've seen what she had to go through. And she's so happy today, you know. So, yes, it's very real. Yes, it's out there. And, yes, we've had fun with it because it's a comedy. But there's some deep-rooted issues in there which we've actually pointed out to be like, are we really that different? You know, one of the biggest differences I actually see with our two cultures is the similarity of how they handle the situation. Because they're so deep rooted into their tradition, they so want, you know, someone from their country. But is it that important? And that's the big question.
Can you tell us one thing we should look for in the movie?
I do want you to look out for the music. The music is fantastic. We've got Afrobeats in there as well as Indian music. And also some hidden messages, you know. I love weaving in messages in there. About the big picture, about going deep. You know, as I said, I do a lot of self-development and pursuit of happiness and you know, motivational speaking. There's a lot of hidden messages in there that I hope people get out of that, along with the laughter.
Hamisha Dariani Ahuja, thank you so much.
Everyone, go watch the movie and let's break Netflix.
Give me some time and I'll charm my way into his heart. Just like I did yours.
Oh, that's so cool.
VOA's Arzuma Kompayore speaking there to Hamisha Dariani Ahuja. And finally, as COVID-19 restrictions ease here in the United States, New York's Broadway is hoping to draw people back to the theater while the movie industry is expanding its footprint in the Big Apple. Evgeny Maslov has our story, narrated by Anna Rice.
The coronavirus pandemic has caused a surge in demand for TV shows and streaming platform projects that can be enjoyed at home. And while the entertainment industry took a big hit from the pandemic lockdown, one New York studio has plenty of work and is expanding. Kaufman Astoria, one of the largest studios on the U.S. East Coast, has just added a new pavilion to the list of its existing ones. It's not Hollywood, but it's definitely growing.
We've been busy here at Kauffman, you know, back since the early 80s. But what we've seen is as the streaming services came into play and more channels, we'll call it, wanted to have original programming, the need for original content production boomed, just like off the charts boom.
Located in Queens, Kauffman Astoria Studios has a long history. Founded in 1920, it is one of the oldest studios in the U.S. Paramount Pictures Studios used to be housed here until it relocated to California.
This was home to silent films, then as talkies came in, it was the Marx Brothers and W.C. Fields and Rudolph Valentino and Gloria Swanson. So it was the heyday, those glory days of Hollywood is what was done here at Kauffman Astoria.
The movie industry moved to Los Angeles in the 1930s because it was cheaper to work out west and weather permitted year-round filming. But New York is still home to lots of TV and film production.
People think, well, you know, of course, you know, Hollywood had become Hollywood by then and there was no filmmaking in New York, but that simply wasn't true. There's always been a steady heartbeat of filmmaking here in New York, even though a lot had shifted to L.A. and there were sort of peaks and valleys in New York. I mean, now, of course, nowadays, it's absolutely thriving. There's so much production here.
Kauffman Astoria Studios is where Sesame Street was originally filmed, as well as TV shows New Amsterdam and Nurse Jackie, and movies like Carlito's Way and Men in Black. And while vaccinations are beginning to allow people to get back out into the world, they are also still looking for the next binge-worthy show. And these expanding New York studios are working hard to keep up with the ever-growing demand. For Evgeny Maslov in New York, NRI's VOA News.
Be sure to join me on the next Straight Talk Africa when we talk about reparations and redress as Namibia negotiates with Germany on compensation for colonial era genocide. We ask how much is enough to make amends for atrocities and other sins of the past. We'll look at lessons from other parts of Africa and the world and hear from Namibians about what this means for the future of their country. Reparations, remorse and redress on the next Straight Talk Africa. We also want to hear what you think about that. We put a question on social media about it for you, so do connect with us on Facebook and Twitter for more about next week's show. From the rest of the Straight Talk Africa team, thank you so much for always being our loyal listeners and viewers. We'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye.